This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Evacuations in central Michigan. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Wednesday, May 20th, glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Two dams have breached following heavy rains north of Lansing, leading to evacuation orders. The worst of the flooding is expected by this afternoon.
More government lockdowns are easing in states like Ohio and New York. However, there's a Justice Department warning about restrictions in California.
The Trump administration has declassified an email from former National Security Advisor Susan Rice. Hear why Republicans are seizing on it.
And why an estimated 100,000 employees of cruise ships remain stuck at sea.
It's important to remember that the industry thought they were shutting down for a month. They were prepared for a 30-day halt on operations. Well, mid-April came and went, and the CDC actually banned cruising through at least the end of July. And so now we're in a situation where more than 100,000 crew members are unable to get home.
Taylor Dalvin at the Miami Herald on limbo for crew members who've been floating for 2 months. Two dams in central Michigan have collapsed following heavy rain, leading to evacuations. Governor Gretchen Whitmer declared a state of emergency for Midland County and said downtown Midland could be under 9 feet of water by this afternoon. The city is about 80 miles north of the capital of Lansing. The governor last night said parts of the city of Midland and Dow Chemical had been or were being evacuated due to the breaching of the Edenville and Sanford dams. Tens of thousands of people are potentially affected by flooding along the Tittabawassee River. Midland City Manager Brad Kay.
The consequence of living in a river valley, of course, is that we have to deal with river floods at times. This, however, is something that is would be unprecedented.
Several dams upstream of Midland had either been breached or were releasing water uncontrollably after 4 to 7 inches of rain fell Sunday and Monday. The Associated Press said emergency responders were going door to door early yesterday morning, warning residents. Some were able to return home, only to be told to leave again. More states are easing lockdown restrictions in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine says he's lifting the state's stay-at-home orders and replacing them with an advisory, encouraging residents to stay in their homes whenever possible and continue social distancing. As New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy rolls back some restrictions, he's also looking at schools.
If there's hope out there that in some form, folks at some point in the future, not crazy distant future, can gather for graduations, if you've got that hope, I have that hope as well.
In New York, the region near Albany was cleared to enter its first phase of economic reopening today. In neighboring Connecticut, some restaurants can now resume outdoor dining. West Virginia will take further steps tomorrow, letting more customers inside restaurants. Meanwhile, California has been told by the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division that its staggered reopening plans treat churches and religious services less favorably than restaurants, factories, and malls. The coronavirus crisis once seemed to be the kind of gut-wrenching shock that would pull together a politically divided nation. Increasingly, though, it is pulling the nation apart along familiar lines. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal, says to see why, start by looking at how the pandemic's effects are falling along partisan lines, leaving people on both sides of the red-blue divide now feeling they are bearing unfair burdens. Jerry, explain.
Well, I think it was unifying for a while, but I think it's become less unifying as it's become clear that the disease, the virus, is not falling evenly across the country, but as it happens, is falling along the red-blue divide in many ways. And that has produced a lot of tension about who's responsible for it, who's paying for it, and how fast do we reopen. And just a couple of statistics that kind of illustrate the division in the way the disease has struck unevenly in the country. So you have 26 states with Republican governors, 24 with Democratic governors. So the country is almost evenly divided right down the middle in that sense. But the coronavirus is not hitting those states evenly by any stretch of the imagination. Two-thirds of confirmed cases are in states with Democratic governors. And when you measure the sheer number of cases, six of the top seven states with the most cases have Democratic governors. They have about half the nation's cases, but only about a third of the nation's population. So this is a virus that has hit much more heavily in blue areas than in red areas. And so the views of what it means and how we spin out of it are almost by definition different as a result.
You referenced these uneven political reactions about the pandemic's burden. Explain what each side feels.
Well, you know, there's a red view that's understandable and a blue view that's understandable. That's an oversimplification, obviously. But as a general proposition, red states look at the country's economy having basically shut down, ground to a halt, hurting everybody for a virus problem that they simply don't think is as severe as the reaction justifies. Because in their states, in many cases, in their communities, in many cases, it just isn't. And so they think they are bearing an unfair economic burden because of a problem that really lies, for the most part, elsewhere. And blue states look at this, we're all in it together kind of rhetoric that we used to hear, or still do hear in some cases, and think, well, not so much, because their states are getting hit much harder by plunging tax revenues and higher medical costs, and they've looked to Washington for some help, state budget and local government help, and they've gotten some. But Democrats now want to provide almost $1 trillion more, and Republicans in the Senate do not. As a footnote, as it happens, you know, if you live in a heavily populated blue state, you feel that you're unrepresented in the Senate, because every state obviously gets two Senate seats. And if you look at those six states, blue states that have been hit hardest by the virus, they have more than half of the cases, but only 12% of the votes in the Senate. So blue states see an imbalance there. So both sides have a grievance. And as this drags on, those grievances have become more prominent.
We're speaking with Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Why Coronavirus Increasingly Exacerbates the Red-Blue Divide. Do you think that the divide trickles down to some of the issues being debated in terms of restrictions like masks, social distancing, or even, you know, the use of hydroxychloroquine or vaccines?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, I think that the whole package of steps that, you know, blue state governors feel they've had to take are now the subject of debate and, in some cases, you know, almost scorn from people who think they were amount to an overreaction. And I think it's, you know, again, I think that's unfortunate, because I think it's fair to say everybody went into this crisis without a playbook, and a lot of people are just trying to do the best they can under very trying and unprecedented circumstances. But I think there is a tendency now on both sides to question the motives and reasoning of those on the other side. And again, as I say, that's, I believe, unfortunate, and maybe it was inevitable, but it's too bad.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Dell Technologies has special business savings right now to help you office everywhere and stay productive. Save up to 45% on desktops, laptops, and do-it-all servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10 and save on essential electronics, all with free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL, or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Thanks for being with us. The declassification of an email has led to more finger pointing by the Trump administration. On the day of President Trump's inauguration, outgoing National Security Advisor Susan Rice sent herself an email that has since drawn intense scrutiny. Now the full text of the email has been declassified, and Politico reviewed it. It says that then FBI Director James Comey worried about sharing classified information with the Trump team because of incoming National Security Advisor Michael Flynn's frequent conversations with the Russian ambassador, but that Mr. Comey had no knowledge of Mr. Flynn actually sharing classified information with the envoy. Reaction from President Trump.
What they've done to General Flynn should never happen. What they've done to the presidency and what they've done to this country can never be allowed to happen again to our country.
Republicans have seized on the document as potential evidence that President Obama had ordered the FBI to spy on the Trump administration, as Mr. Trump has alleged. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for Ms. Rice said it shows the Obama administration handled the Flynn situation appropriately. It's 21 minutes after the hour on this morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell offered Congress contrasting views of what the government's most urgent priority should be. Mnuchin warned that prolonged business shutdowns would pose long-term threats to the economy, from widespread bankruptcy to long-term unemployment.
Working closely with the governors, we are beginning to open the economy in a way that minimizes risk to workers and customers. We expect economic conditions to improve in the third and fourth quarter and into next year.
Powell stressed that Congress must consider providing further financial aid to support states, localities, businesses, and individuals to prevent an even deeper recession.
Number two.
Republican political operatives are recruiting extremely pro-Trump doctors to go on television to prescribe reviving the economy as quickly as possible without waiting to meet safety benchmarks proposed by the CDC. The plan was discussed in a May 11th conference call with a senior staffer for the Trump re-election campaign, organized by an affiliate of the GOP-aligned Council for National Policy. The recording of the hour-long call was provided to the Associated Press.
Number three.
Rapidly rising water overtook dams and has forced the evacuation of about 10,000 people in central Michigan, where Governor Gretchen Whitmer says one downtown could be under 9 feet of water today. Families living along the Tittabawassee River and connected lakes in Midland County have been ordered to leave home.
Please, do not hesitate. Go stay with a friend or relative or get to one of these shelters now.
There were catastrophic dam failures about 140 miles north of Detroit and 7 miles downriver. A federal judge has ordered Texas to allow any of the state's 16 million voters to cast a ballot by mail. The ruling paves the way for what would be one of the most dramatic expansions of mail-in voting in the country. Republican Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says he'll appeal. Texas will hold primary runoff elections in July. The 152nd running of the Belmont Stakes in New York will be held on June 20th, making the Belmont the first leg of the Triple Crown for the first time ever. It will be held without fans. The Belmonts will be followed by the Kentucky Derby on September 5th and the Preakness on October 3rd.
Wow.
Flip that around.
Yeah,
it's the opposite.
So if you win the Triple Crown, is there an asterisk next to the horse and jockey's names?
I don't know. It's still the same three.
Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for being with us on the personal finance front. How can we as Americans come out of this pandemic crisis without being financially devastated? We're joined now by Chris Mansky, financial advisor and author of the upcoming book, The Prepared Investor. Chris, what are you hearing from clients?
Most people, when they're talking with us, they're thinking about when is quarantine going to end? How will that affect the portfolio? And for the most part, those are positive impacts. You know, the stock market is a forward-looking indicator, and the virus and the quarantine, they're not done with us yet, but we're already beginning to look beyond that. And certainly the stimulus has helped out a little bit with that.
Do you have a feel right now for whether or not we're in a V or a W type of economic recovery?
A W would not surprise me at all. I mean, something as simple as Mother Nature changing the virus. You know, these things adapt, they change, and as they metamorphosize, we might see some new wave of frustration and fear, especially since, you know, we are doing something that many people are against. There's a real dichotomy out there about letting the quarantine be in the past, or do we stay in it? And, you know, as the virus continues to do what it naturally is supposed to, you know, I wouldn't imagine that everyone will be satisfied.
Yeah. How do we start prepping for next time? Because, you know, this is not going to be the last type of virus that we face.
No, it's not. In fact, the virus is a kind of crisis which we've experienced before. We've had viruses, new viruses hit us. There are many types of crises, and I think being prepared means looking at crisis a little differently than Wall Street typically has in the past. We usually just say crisis has hit, there's a reaction to it. You know, the normal reaction is stay the course, don't change anything, and someday, maybe years later, your portfolio will come back. But all crises are not created equal. And giving some attention to that, education and training, means you can be better prepared.
All right, like how? Give an example.
Well, for example, a systemic crisis like the virus. We've seen new viruses before, and we didn't have a market correction occur because of them. So what's the difference? Well, it was quarantine. You know, when quarantine happened, you know, that's what caused the meltdown, especially since it was coupled with, you know, the problems in the energy sector. Well, that is a much different crisis, one that, I mean, you can see the end of very quickly in sight, as opposed to the great financial crisis in 2008-2009. That was a much different scenario, and the end was not as obvious.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Mansky, financial advisor. Again, the upcoming book is called The Prepared Investor. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Everything begins with an idea, but how do you bring it to life? If your idea requires graphic design, copywriting, web programming, or some other skill, how do you locate that help? For the talent you need at a price you can afford, the answer is Fiverr. Fiverr connects you to a network of trusted freelance talent that's worked on some of the most influential brands in the world. Fiverr Talents offer hundreds of digital services that you can search by service, deadline, price, reviews, and more. With Fiverr, there are no unknowns. You'll know exactly what you're paying for upfront with no negotiation. And Fiverr's talents are proven to ensure you get the expertise you need to bring your idea to life. And when you give Fiverr a try now, you'll save. Check out Fiverr.com today and use my code Gordon to receive 10% off your first order. It's so easy. Find all the digital services you need in one place at Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Again, that's Fiverr.com and the code Gordon. Try Fiverr today.
This is America's First News, your number one source for coronavirus facts and information. This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us, and welcome into Wednesday, May 20th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Evacuation orders in parts of central Michigan after two dams collapsed. More states announce further reopenings. McDonald's workers in 20 cities plan to strike today, demanding more coronavirus protections. Sad news to pass along. We lost a friend to this program. Karen Blumenthal, former personal finance writer for The Wall Street Journal, has died of a heart attack at 61. She is also the wife of Scott McCartney, travel writer for the Journal. Scott is a frequent guest with us. We send our deepest condolences. In the avenue of ocean that stretches south from Miami to Cuba and northeast to the Bahamas, dozens of cruise ships sail back and forth every so often. They come into Florida ports to refuel and restock. Otherwise, they wait. Taylor Dalvin, business reporter at the Miami Herald, says the passengers are long gone, but about 100,000 crew members on board remain trapped at sea with little reliable information about when they can return to their families on land. Taylor, what's going on here?
Crew members are still stuck on ships, as the headline suggests. Cruising in the U.S. was canceled altogether on March 13th. We saw a scramble after that, obviously, to get ships back to port and to get passengers safely home. That effort took months, and is during that time, crew members remained on board largely. Some were even brought, new crew members were brought on board. It's important to remember that the industry thought they were shutting down for a month. they were prepared for a 30-day halt on operations. Well, mid-April came and went, and the CDC actually banned cruising through at least the end of July. And so now we're in a situation where more than 100,000 crew members are unable to get home or still waiting to be repatriated from these ships. Meanwhile, more are getting sick with COVID-19, and they tell me their mental health is really deteriorating.
All right, so for some of these folks, I would imagine they've exceeded the 14-day quarantine time, right? But that doesn't matter? That doesn't play in here?
Yeah, so there's a lot of issues going on. Countries have put in travel restrictions. Those range from, for example, in the U.S., if companies want to disembark crew in the U.S., they have to transport them home using private transportation. So that means a charter flight or a private bus or car. And then the extreme travel restriction is countries that are not allowing any foreign nationals to be repatriated yet. So for all the nationalities of people who work on cruise ships, the companies are having to deal with these restrictions for all of them and navigate the logistics there. There are crew members who have been in their cabins for more than 14 days, for more than a month, and unable to leave in a sort of quarantine isolation situation. But yeah, it's difficult. I know the companies are working incredibly hard on this, but it's also really expensive for them to meet the demands of these governments who are, you know, understandably looking out for the health and safety of people in their countries and also for their health system infrastructure. So that's leaving these more than 100,000 people in limbo.
My goodness. How much time have some of these crew members spent? Like, who's been on the longest? Is there a particular ship, for example?
Well, they've all been, I mean, the industry shut down on March 13th. So more than 2 months, these crew members have been stuck and haven't touched land.
We're speaking with Taylor Dolvin, business reporter at the Miami Herald. She's got a fascinating piece entitled "No Information, No Way Off. 100,000 crew members remain in cruise ship limbo for months." How about the mental health of some of these folks? You referenced it earlier.
Yeah, crew members tell me they're growing increasingly desperate. You know, every time they're told of a date they'll be flying home or a plan to get them home, that plan has fell through. And it really hurts their mental health, and just remaining, you know, not being on land, remaining sometimes in their rooms isolated, if not just remaining on these ships is really difficult. They're not, many of them aren't being paid. If they are being paid, it's not their regular salary. And so they're worried, you know, about their families and how they'll support them. And they're just not able to leave. They just have no control over the situation. So I would say just increasingly desperate and hopeless.
Boy, have some of the ships been completely free of coronavirus at this point?
Yes. So our reporting, we are tracking the number of coronavirus cases linked to cruise ships, and we found that a little over 20% of the global cruise fleet has been affected by the virus. So that leaves the rest that we haven't found any cases for those ships.
That's some staggering numbers. Taylor Dolvin, business reporter at the Miami Herald. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It's time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we've seen no shortage of bored people attempting outlandish feats during the pandemic, with the Guinness record book practically being rewritten with entries from 2020. Now a North Carolina track coach, inspired by another touchstone event from this year, has apparently set another incredible mark. Dylan Sorensen, who coaches the long-distance runners at UNC, said he was inspired by the Michael Jordan ESPN documentary The Last Dance to do something special for his 30th birthday. Sorensen celebrated his birthday Friday by buying a basketball and taking it to the asphalt track at a Chapel Hill Middle School. The running coach donned a Michael Jordan number 23 basketball jersey and ran a mile while dribbling the ball in 4 minutes 37 seconds, which if it stands would shatter the previous record of 4 minutes 52 seconds. Sorensen filmed his run, but it was unclear whether there would be sufficient evidence for the coach to get a Guinness World Record for his feat.
Man.
4 minutes and 37 seconds. I mean, you know, I couldn't even come within, you know, 2.5 minutes of that, or 2 minutes of that at least.
Without dribbling a ball.
Yeah, without dribbling a ball, yeah.
That's
you know, there was a time, remember, when like the 4 minute mile, that was the big, you know, the big, you know, now you can just dribble a ball 4 minutes and 30 seconds.
Holy
and it's apparently not a big deal. What I love most about this as a potential record, and I hope he gets the record, is that it wasn't something he trained for like months and months and months. And, you know, he just picked, he says, you know, I'm going to stop by Dick's and pick up a basketball and just see what happens, you know, and he winds up, you know, breaking a record. That's pretty cool.
Well, I wonder how many dribbles per lap.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
He's flying.
Yeah, I mean, you have to dribble that pretty far out in front of you, obviously. So that takes some skill in and of itself. And on an asphalt track, we're not talking about a hardwood floor.
Right.
An asphalt track you're dribbling a basketball on. That's incredible.
So at his top speed, if you were to put him on a hardwood basketball floor, let's say it was a fast break.
Right.
Like, how quickly could he conduct the fast break? With two dribbles maybe to go end to end or something like that? Like at his top speed?
Maybe this is an untapped resource for the NBA, track runners, right?
That's remarkable.
About fast breaks.
The coordination is amazing.
And we knew, Gordon, all those baked goods had to go somewhere. A recent survey of fitness-focused Americans has pretty much confirmed that, yes, we're all packing on a few pounds during our extended coronavirus quarantines, thanks in part to our increased alcohol and bread consumption. The survey polled 2,000 Americans on their current exercise and diet habits, ultimately determining that the average American has gained about 5 pounds. The biggest contributing factors include the increased consumption of both alcohol and carby foods like baked goods and pastas. Additionally, 65% of those polled admitted to taking a break from their usual exercise regimens, and on average, we think it'll take about 2 months before we can return to our pre-pandemic body once all the restrictions are lifted. I would say 5 pounds sounds about right for me.
Okay.
that's right about the same level there.
I'm going to connect your two stories.
Okay.
Personally.
Yes.
So yesterday, I happened to watch episode one of The Last Dance.
Okay.
While sipping a gin and tonic and eating chips. See? How about that?
So you were inspired not to go run a mile in 4 minutes and 37 seconds, but to sip wine and eat chips.
Half a mile in 4 minutes and 37 seconds is nice. It's a nice little pace.
Sure. I don't think Guinness will come knocking on your door, though.
Holy cow. That's unbelievable. Well, referencing your last story, chunks, hunks, and drunks. That's who's emerging from the pandemic. Chunks. Like people who've gained weight, the hunks who are working out.
The pandemic story.
13 minutes in front of the hour. Even in tough times, you want to try to look your best, even if it's just from the waist up for those video chats. So when it comes to your facial hair, Harry's has you covered, bringing you incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices, just $2 per blade. Now, when it comes to my facial hair, I'm typically a goatee guy, but lately I've been using these times of home quarantine to experiment with a full beard. This has allowed the precision trimmer blade on my Harry's razor to take center stage. I use it to make sure my new beard is looking its best. Now you can keep your face looking smooth too, or your beard looking clean, with a Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep. Just go to harrys.com/Gordon to order yours. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving better today. Thanks for being with us. New research from the Society for Human Resource Management and Oxford Economics says in total, U.S. workers have lost $1.3 trillion in income, amounting to an average loss of nearly $8,900 per worker. About 20% of that loss represents workers who remain employed. The study found these workers either accepted a lower pay or reduced hours. The report suggests that job losses alone are not a complete account of COVID-19's impact on workers. Meanwhile, separate research by the Urban Institute finds that for the 36 million Americans who have lost their jobs, half are likely to accept 16% lower pay once they land a new job. The Urban Institute is a progressive think tank based in Washington, D.C. That percentage increases with age. For example, workers between the ages of 50 and 61 on average are likely to accept a 23% pay cut upon reemployment. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Senate Banking Committee has taken its first look at spending under the massive CARES Act. Fed Chair Jerome Powell and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin were pressed by senators about their involvement in specific aspects of the $2 trillion relief package. Powell says the Fed will continue to do what it can.
This reversal of economic fortune has caused a level of pain that is hard to capture in words, as lives are upended amid great uncertainty about the future. The Federal Reserve is committed to using our full range of tools to support the economy in this challenging time.
Mnuchin says unemployment numbers will get worse before they get better.
Number two.
President Trump called the number of COVID-19 cases in the U.S. the highest in the world, a badge of honor, arguing the still increasing number of cases is simply evidence the country is testing more.
If we were testing 1 million people instead of 14 million people, we would have far fewer cases, right? So I view it as a badge of honor. Really, it's a badge of honor. It's a great tribute to the testing and all of the work that a lot of professionals have done.
The U.S. has performed 12 million tests.
Number three.
A scientist who created a dashboard for monitoring Florida's rising number of COVID-19 cases says she was fired for refusing to manipulate the data. Rebecca Jones worked for the Florida Department of Health. She helped create a data portal that has provided information on COVID-19 cases broken down by zip code. Jones claimed she was dismissed after she refused to manually change data to drum up support for a plan to reopen. Norma McCorvey, the woman known as Jane Roe in the landmark 1973 Supreme Court Roe v. Wade ruling legalizing abortion, said she was lying when she switched to support the anti-abortion movement, saying she had been paid to do so. In a new documentary made before her death in 2017 and due to be broadcast on Friday, McCorvey makes what she calls a deathbed confession. She said she took money and was told what to say. A federal judge in Virginia has ruled that a salvage firm can retrieve the Marconi wireless telegraph machine that broadcast distress calls from the sinking Titanic. The judge agreed that the telegraph is historically and culturally important and could soon be lost within the rapidly decaying wreck site. The ruling modifies a previous judge's order that forbids cutting into the shipwreck or detaching any part of it.
Jeez, I can't imagine that's still in good shape.
No, but they're trying to get it out so that something is left.
Okay. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour.
Dell Technologies has special business savings right now to help you office everywhere and stay productive. Save up to 45% on desktops, laptops, and do-it-all servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10 and save on essential electronics. All with free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit Dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
Thanks for being with us. Although some golf courses have closed, others have stayed open or recently opened during lockdowns. The open ones are taking extra precautions. They've shut clubhouses and raised cups out of the ground so golfers don't touch them, in addition to reducing or eliminating the use of caddies and carts. Now, when carts aren't used, golfers carry their own bags and walk. It can be tiring. That's led to a surge in demand for push carts, essentially a piece of metal with a couple of wheels attached that makes lugging a bag of clubs around a golf course for 4 hours slightly easier. The Wall Street Journal says distributors are warning it can now take weeks or months to get new shipments, a process hardly made easier by coronavirus supply chain disruptions. Bag Boy, a maker of push carts, has seen sales increase 4 times from prior years. After it makes more push carts, summer sales could be 8 times last year's. Google says this month it found that golf bag accessories were the number one top trending retail category, with push carts and pull carts the top subtopics. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.